You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, don't you? If I really need a word, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window, trying to shout into the war, and I'd like to give you information. Ask me for more, but makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Senses not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. This is Dave Hodges, and I am your host, and I'm pleased to be with you on this July 3rd, and happy pre-July 4th greetings to everybody, and as we celebrate what we used to have as opposed to what we currently have, but we're in the process of making America great again. Anyway, this hour is brought to you by a lot of people who I trust and a lot of people who you better pay attention to. And by the way, I've got two unconfirmed reports, and this ties right into our first sponsor. And if you in the listening audience have anything on this, please email me during the show, and we'll try to get that up. That's Dave Hodges of the CommonSenseShow.com. Here's the story real quick that's breaking here, and I don't know if it's true yet. I won't be able to vet this until after our show. But what we've got is two reports saying that the gold and silver bullion bank accounts are being shut down. People cannot access them, and I do not have information beyond that. If anybody has anything on that, please send that over to us. Anyway, speaking of a gold and silver bullion, you better get your gold, you better get your silver, your precious metals, and you better get it now. I was talking to Bob Griswold before the show. I was talking to a lot of people before the show, and they're all saying the same thing. We don't think we got a lot of time left. You need to convert your soon-to-be worthless cash into precious metals. And to do that, give Steve a call tomorrow at 406-586-4842. Again, Steve Quayle's number, Renaissance Precious Metals, 406-586-4842. And speaking of Bob Griswold, he told me 2 weeks ago, and it hasn't been a point of emphasis, but very matter of fact, if you don't hurry up and order your night vision, you're not going to get it until October. And the game could be over then. And Doug and I are going to get into that tonight. Doug Hagman, our guest for the first 2 hours. So I would suggest that you kind of pony on up to readymaderesources.com after the show, and then give Bob a call tomorrow and place your order, night vision. He's also got, he's got everything that you really want for prepping, everything. Water filtration, you name it, he's got it. Give him a call tomorrow, 800-627-3809. And finally, if money does stop flowing, and gold and silver bullion could be the chest pain before the heart attack if this story ends up being true, you're going to see the just-in-time delivery stop. You ain't going to go to the grocery store and get food for longer than about 24 hours. Get your food now. Numana.com/Hodges. And through tomorrow night at midnight, we have a 5% discounted price for every product that we have. And that's only good through July 4 at midnight. Numana.com/Hodges. Do what you need to do right now to protect your family. Well, we have a great, great show for you tonight. And I say great because any time that Doug graces us with his presence, the same as Steve Quayle did last week, we have a classic show, no question. And we're going to try to get this up on the archives as quickly as possible, so if you're not able to listen to the entire interview, you will be able to access the interview in its entirety. And we're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton. And then in the third hour, Katie's got a very special segment. We're going to kind of leave this as a mystery because she's going to be talking about one of my favorite topics in healthcare, something that the mainstream medicine community doesn't want you to know about. So we've got an action-packed show, and I think we've got all the preliminaries out of the way. So let's welcome Doug Hagman to the Common Sense Show. Doug, thanks for coming on this pre-July 4th evening, and we really are glad you could do this on a holiday weekend. Thanks so much.
Hey, well, Dave, thanks so much for having me. I got to tell you, you know, it's no holidays when you're covering the news and doing investigations. I've worked every holiday I think in my life, pretty much. So, you know, but I'll tell you, what a gracious introduction. And by the way, last week's show with Steve Quayle, that was great. I would urge everyone to go back and listen to that.
Steve had the classic line last week. He's rolling along 7-8 minutes worth of dialogue, and I mean, it's one home run after another. And then he says, Dave, I don't want to just do all the talking. And I said, Steve, you're on a roll. I know when to shut up. And he gave us one of the best shows we ever had. And we're still getting major hits on this archive. Major, as we've distributed around. And thanks so much for Steve. But no less the controversy tonight, because you've been doing work on, God, my dad raised me to respect women, Doug, so it's hard to say this, but I call her America's number one witch.
Yeah. Well, Hillary
Clinton.
Yeah, Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton. And she, there is evidence out there that she is actually a practicing witch. People might not believe that, but and they might say, oh, you know, what a bunch of hooey. But, I mean, Larry Nichols had, the ultimate Clinton insider, had talked about her witchiness and witch activities every month in California. But you know, even well beyond that, Hillary Clinton as a presumptive Democratic nominee, we got some real issues here. And that little tyranny on the tarmac, that tyranny in plain sight last week, you know, I got to tell you, man.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, the appearance of impropriety, it goes well beyond that. What happened last week, I think, was really an in-your-face, the ultimate proverbial middle finger to all of America by the Clintons, by the people in power, by the globalists, who said, you know what, she's going to skate. And I truly believe that there won't be any charges filed against her, and she's going to skate. But
yes.
The reason for that is she knows where the body's buried, and her and Billy and company buried the bodies, or had them buried, I should say, whether it's from Vince Foster to the latest victim, and then many will argue this, but John Ash, the UN official who was found with a barbell across his throat, reminiscent of the old Columbo series with Robert Conrad. I don't know how many people might remember that. That was back in 72, 73.
And you're being too gracious here, because you don't die that way. That it's totally an unbelievable, it's a sloppier crime scene than Vince Foster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and you know, it amazes me how many people cannot or refuse to see the connections, Dave, between the various people who suddenly wind up without a pulse around the Clintons, especially when they present a threat to their empire. And if you go through the document data dump that was took place December 31st of last year from Guccifer 2.0. And you open the zip file and see all of the documentation about Clinton. And you start getting into the Clinton Foundation. You start getting into the allies and the people against Clinton. You can really go down some rabbit trails. And that's what I did. And right now I've got like just an incredible amount of information. So people, you know, want to take notes or listen to this again, I would highly recommend it, because at the epicenter of everything, well, you know, we used to say in the investigative field, Davis, follow the money. And with money comes influence, power, and obviously corruption. And at the epicenter of Hillary Rodham Clinton, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, the witch, and Bill Clinton, is the Clinton Foundation. And the Clinton Foundation is the vehicle, in my opinion, investigative opinion, that is funding an incredible amount of black projects that include something you touched on, that's Uranium One. You'll find, I think, that a lot of what took place with respect to foreign investment, foreign takeover, Russian takeover of 20% of America's uranium, which is a huge national security issue, really was spurned through the Clinton Foundation. And
Doug, let me speak to that just for a second.
Yeah.
The New York Times first wrote an article about this back in 2015, and my eyes just jumped out of my head. I said, oh my God, where's everybody at on this? And I looked into it, I made some phone calls, and sure enough, it's all true. So I wrote the story. Crickets chirping, no one paid attention. And then as the presidential race heated up and Donald Trump started calling Hillary Crooked Hillary and she should resign from the race and so forth, and I thought, okay, this is a good time to bring this up again. Again, crickets chirping. Now, Fox News breaks the story today that Senator D'Amato is going to bring this up. And what this is going on to BLM land, taking uranium in the name of Uranium One, which is a front company for the Clinton Foundation, run out of Canada. And then they shuffle the uranium off to Putin, who pays the Clinton Foundation, and they're using that money to run for president. I don't know how many felonies there are there, but I counted about seven. And then they pay Bill $500,000 for making speeches in Moscow on the same deal. And the point I made in the first article I wrote, Doug, was we executed, as a country, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg in the 1950s for selling nuclear secrets to the Russians. And now we have a woman giving nuclear-grade material to the Russians, and she's getting off scot-free.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you really did a great job. In fact, I used a lot of your investigative findings and as really the basis for my investigation. You know, the Clinton Foundation has accepted millions of dollars from seven foreign governments during Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. And one of those donations violated its ethics agreements with the current executive branch. Now, first of all, people have to understand the Clinton Foundation is an umbrella of several or numerous various other groups, and it's kind of a money laundering operation. Again, in my view, everything I'm saying here is in my investigative professional view, so take that for what it's worth. But I've spent a lot of time investigating this, and I got to tell you, there is so much here that it would take a team of investigators weeks, months perhaps, to unravel what has been really raveled up since the foundation's beginnings back in 2001, I believe. When they began to when they opened the Little Rock, Arkansas William J. Clinton Foundation and the Bill and Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation back in 2001, ostensibly to alleviate poverty, improve global health, strengthen economies, protect the environment, and sadly they claim to be nonpartisan, but the foundation administers also several major programs, and one of the best known happens to be the Clinton Global Initiative, which was incorporated, and anytime you want me to stop, just say, hey, shut up. But that was incorporated back in 2005 as an independent nonprofit. And it's the acronym, of course, is CGI. And what they what they're doing is they're persuading wealthy people to pledge money to the Clinton Foundation programs. And you've got former World Wildlife President David Sandalow, for example, who served as a senior environmental official in the Clinton administration. He chairs the CGI working group, and their advisory board consists of people from the National Resources Defense Council. You've got EPA administrators. You've got Pew Center on Global Climate Change people. You've got people from Sun Microsystems and just a host of other companies. And a number of other CGI working groups are also headed, and this is important because You have to understand the structure of these groups. They're headed by senior fellows at the Center for American Progress, and we all know what that is.
Yes.
You know, so, and they also previously worked for the Clinton administration. So the Clinton, by the way, the Clinton economic advisor, Gene Sperling, he chairs the CGI Educational Working Group. There's a lot of incestuous political relationships here with the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative. Now, this might sound boring, and I don't want it to be, because investigations most of the time really are tedious and boring, but I'll try to make this as interesting as possible. You've got offshoots of the Clinton Foundation, and you've got major initiatives of the foundation, and they're all over the map in terms of their permeation into various sectors of our economy and society. You've got the Clinton Health Access Initiative. You've got the Clinton Climate Initiative. You've got the Clinton Economic Opportunity Initiative. You've got Alliance for a Healthier Generation. You've got the Clinton Development Initiative. All of these are serving as globalist NGOs to push forth, to advance the one world order, the globalist agenda. And this is what's at stake in this election, because all of these initiatives by the Clinton Foundation are the same initiatives by the globalists who are running things behind the scenes in this renegade regime that we're seeing today. Now, we're also seeing a lot of quid pro quo donations to the Clinton Foundation, pay to play, so to speak. You can go back, 10, 12 years when Robert Kongl donated $100,000 to the foundation, and then Clinton helped that guy access millions of dollars in federal assistance for his mall project. That was a real estate development initiative. And that's just one. You go back 10 years, the Clinton Foundation gave $250,000 to the extremely corrupt, again, in my view, pro-socialist community organization ACORN. And well, I guess that's been proven, the level of corruption there. And then you've got the tax deductions for donations they made to their own foundations. And this is I started following this, and it was like chasing your own tail. Okay, imagine having a couple of checkbooks, same bank, different bank accounts, but you control both checkbooks. So you write one check, deposit it in from one account, deposit it in your other account, you get a tax break and a deduction as well. I mean, you get a deduction, and it's kind of a self-laundering feature that they have developed. So between 2001 and the latest figures by individuals investigating this, 2001 to 2008, both Bill and Hillary claimed $10.2 million in deductions, charitable contributions from their personal account to their charity, the charitable foundation. So, you know, if their tax liability, and imagine being able to do this as just a normal guy, like, you know, normal people like us. All right, can we do this? Of course not. And the foundation itself, the Hill and Billary, that was intentional, by the way, they refuse to even open their books in many cases or reveal information about their stock, their ties with foreign governments, and especially with the Chinese government. You'll remember, people will remember back during the Clinton years, the cozy relationship that Bill Clinton had with the Chinese. And the Clintons Foundation, despite identifying more than 200,000 of its donors already, they won't say who paid it windfall prices for stock in the internet firm with links to the Chinese government. What I meant to say there, and that was kind of a bulky statement, is the foundation benefited through investments and returns with the Chinese government on internet stocks, okay? And this was during the time that Hillary, or right before and overlapping into the time when Hillary was Secretary of State. So it's kind of you're dealing with foreign governments by an official of the U.S. government, which is just absolutely insane. You mentioned the Rosenbergs before. Man, they ain't got nothing over Hillary, let me tell you. And there's, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood connection. Because 3 years ago, 4 years ago, there was a Clinton Foundation employee named Jihad El Haddad. He left his job from the Clinton Foundation to take a full-time position with the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, Haddad's time at the Clinton Foundation overlapped with his work at the Muslim Brotherhood. So think about that for a minute. Here's a guy that's actually working in Cairo, Egypt, in February of 2011, when he took control of something called the Renaissance Project. Now, this is a Muslim Brotherhood-backed economic recovery program while working for the Clinton Foundation. All right, during that time. And when you start peeling back the layers of this, the Renaissance Project, the Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood Renaissance Project, it was Morsi's, Mohammed Morsi's baby. It was actually far more than that. It was far more than any political wing. It was an Islamic outreach to terrorists, if you will. And he became, this Clinton Foundation employee became one of the key people in this particular initiative for the Muslim Brotherhood, for Mohammed Morsi. And you just can't make this stuff up. All right. So, in fact, he was in September of 13, he was arrested by Egyptian authorities in this huge roundup at the time of Islamist terrorists. And there was a guy at the time, and I believe this did make the news, Eric Traeger. He was a fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. An expert on Egyptian affairs said that it was only a matter of time before Haddad was arrested. Now, many of the other Muslim Brotherhood spokespeople had been apprehended, and in addition to decapitating the organization, interesting choice of words, the military-backed government has been specifically targeting the Brotherhood's media wing, including by shutting down its TV stations at the time under Morsi and after his ouster. And that happened to be on July 3rd of 2013, 3 years ago today. So, very interesting times as well. So, I guess I said all of that because we've got this presidential presumptive nominee for the Democratic ticket who's going to skate on the email, skate on Benghazi, who's going to basically skate on every criminal scandalous issue over the that she's been involved with since she got out of college, or even during her college time, but since she left college. And in my view, steal the 2016 election and become the next the first woman president of the United States. And I really hope I'm wrong. But the fix is in, and we saw it this week, and we've seen it over the last two decades. And if people don't understand what we're seeing, then, man, you know,
you're right. The people don't understand. In fact, you know, the Russians get it better than we do. Do you know the Russian press is coming out and saying, if Clinton skates, it just shows how rigged the American system is? The Russians can figure this out, but about 50% of this country is in la-la land.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it amazes me. It doesn't surprise me. It just makes me sad that, you know, you've got guys like Mark Dice who go out on the Santa Monica Pier or somewhere down in San Diego somewhere, and they interview people walking by. You know, what is You know, what are we celebrating for the 4th of July? Our independence from China, for example, or the, you know, the independence from Mexico. And people just nod their heads and say, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Or, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to throw a couple of hamburgers on the grill or light up a fatty and you know, do my thing. I noticed one of the interviews had a first-year college student who couldn't name any of the founding fathers. But yet, you know, I saw one video where there was a visitor from Italy being interviewed, and that person knew our history better than the people in this country. So that tells us something.
Well, just shows you how dumbed down we are. I want to go back to something you said about the Clinton Foundation. You said they had their tentacles everywhere. Do you think they're trying to compete with Bill Gates?
You know, I don't know if there's a level of competition. I think there's a level of complicity. And I think that's even more insidious when you look at the amount of money that's being tossed out there. Because I'm looking at my notes here, I've done a lot of fraud investigations. 30 years as an investigator, fraud investigations was my primary venue, followed by forensic discipline of bloodstain analysis. But having said that, and then surveillance, but this fraud investigation into the Clinton Foundation, to me, is one of the most complex and exquisitely laid out networks I've ever seen. Okay, because they've got, I'm looking at my notes here, I'm trying to find, they've got almost two dozen different iterations with under the umbrella of the Clinton Foundation, and they've got the donors to the Clinton Foundation who've received prestigious awards, whether it be from the various departments of the government, including but not limited to the State Department, are numerous. For example, and this is something too. I mean, when we look at an individual like Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, when we look at her as a potential suspect or a suspect in a potential criminal case, we look at something called a course of criminal conduct. And of course, there, you know, during her time at the State Department, she had, for example, had been running the Clinton Foundation or been involved in the Clinton Foundation. I don't care what people say. Oh no, she, you know, they signed off. She signed off. She could. Now she still had influence over that. But when you look at the quid pro quo with respect to the donors and her State Department position, she served as DOS. As Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013. 22 of 37 corporations nominated for State Department's prestigious award for corporate excellence. And six of the ultimate winners of that award were donors to the Clinton Foundation. Okay, statistics that would... That are off the map in terms of anything coincidental. You had Cisco, the biggest foundation contributor, nominated back in 2009. They gave the Clinton Foundation, this Clinton charity, between $1 and $5 million. And then one in 2010, when 8 of the 12 finalists and another 2 of the 3 winners had donated the fund, they were given this award. And with the award comes special privileges. Mars, for example, had given between, well, a paltry sum of between 25 and 50 grand. Whereas Coca-Cola, much more generous, they gave 5 to 10 million. But When you're looking at these donors, the 7 of the 12 finalists for an award, we'll say in 2011, Procter and Gamble, most of these corporations had contributed between 1 and 5 million. So I guess what I'm saying, when you look at this foundation, looking at just domestically or globally with respect to corporations, here you have Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, serving as Secretary of State. She's got influence. She has a lot of power. She can make a lot of things happen in that capacity. You've got corporations, national and international, donating to the foundation. And then she, in turn, making awards through the foundation. And from there, the government awarding or giving a specific access to these corporations on larger global initiatives. And this is the criminal course of conduct we're seeing. And this is all well documented because, and the overlap, by the way, of domestic donors to the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton's political campaigns, just amazing. The Washington Post even wrote about this. They even conducted a review of the Clinton Foundation data through 2014. They found substantial overlap between Clinton, the Clinton political machinery, and the Hillary Clinton or the Clinton Foundation. In fact, half of the major donors who were supporting Ready for Hillary, and which was an organization promoting Clinton's 2016 presidential run before she actually declared, and nearly half of the bundlers from Hillary's 2008 campaign had given $10,000 or more to the Clinton Foundation, either personally. Or, and this is where it gets really murky, or through foundations or businesses which they themselves headed, or they were CEOs or other nonprofits, for example, that they might have chaired. And as of early last year, for example, Clinton fundraiser Susan Tompkins Buell, she had given the Clinton Foundation some $10 million from her charitable fund, which wouldn't go. You have to follow the windy rivers of incestuous conduct here to really understand where this is all headed. Clinton supporter and billionaire Haim Saban gave an estimated $25 million to the foundation. What did they get in return? Influence. And even more, and I'm going to say this, and this should make everyone pay attention. In 2014, the government of Qatar, well, actually, a member of the Qatar government, gave the foundation somewhere between $250,000 and $500,000 or $500,000. The previous to that, the government of Qatar had donated between $1 and $5 million to the foundation. This at the time of the Libyan takeover. And if you follow the gun running operation by the CIA, headed by Obama and headed by Clinton, and you see where the money is coming from the foundation, okay, for certain off the books things that are taking place while she was head of the Department of State and running a covert black ops criminal cabal of the CIA, you can start to connect the dots and say, wait a minute, the government of Qatar giving the foundation money and then having Hillary Clinton acting as a proxy for that nation, that Muslim nation, to overthrow Gaddafi, for what? I mean, this gets really deep. And I hope I'm poking at some hornet's nests here, because I really want people to understand the complexity and the depth of criminality we're seeing here. And this is
why. Doug, let me interject something here too, because there's a parallel path that comes into this and intersects it, and it is at Libya. And my research, when I broke that story on Benghazi back in 2012 with insider sources, I had information that, and this was a minor part of my story. The major part was how close we came to a military coup over this. But the ancillary information that came up, Doug, was, trying to think of the best way to put it. Chris Stevens was working for the CIA. I'm sure you know that. And he was running guns, drugs, and kids. And he was doing it to unseat Gaddafi so they could arm Al-Qaeda. And it was at the behest of Hillary Clinton. He was taking direct orders from her. And that's information I had that just goes hand in glove with what you're saying right here.
You know what, Dave, and you did a fantastic job in running that, well, a series of stories about Benghazi, articles about Benghazi. What people really need to understand is, and this is my view, and the fruits of my investigation, Benghazi and, well, Libya was all about destabilizing, obviously getting Gaddafi out of there and taking, well, looting that country. But also, that was part of changing the power structure in the Middle East. Now, what happened, and people need to remember this, after Reagan accidentally, yeah, on purpose, dropped a bomb in Tripoli and killed Gaddafi's daughter, there was a change of heart that took place. And Gaddafi and his son, specifically Syed, who's still alive, they were providing the United States with information, especially after 2001, after 9/11 took place, with information about Al-Qaeda. Well, of course, people probably know about the gold and about everything, and about the gold-backed currency that Gaddafi wanted to institute, and about his influence over Africa, and that was intolerable to the signers of the PNAC document. But what happened with Benghazi is of particular interest, because in the run-up to this, and, you know, 800 pages that were released last week, are you kidding me? Not one dot of ink. Not one sentence did they talk about the fact that this was a CIA annex. This was a CIA building. And 99.9% of the people, including many people in our own government, didn't even know it was there. Okay? In Benghazi. And Benghazi was the hub, the central logistics hubs, as you said, for weapons shipment, for the training of terrorists. They were shipping weapons to Turkey and other locations for their ultimate destination in Syria. And people and companies and websites like Snopes and these websites that are funded by the leftist, progressive, liberal wackos will say, well, this is nothing but a conspiracy theory. Well, no, not when there's a verification of boats that are being used to funnel weapons, and they're actually being caught and headed towards Syria. And we also have the different proxy groups who made the attack on the compound as being partly backed by Iran, which of course is a proxy for Russia. Putin knew exactly what was taking place in Benghazi, told Turkey and told Stevens, but told Turkey and told Stevens through the Turkish ambassador to stop what they were doing. Of course, they were closing up shop anyway, because most of the weapons had already been repurposed, and some of the weapons too were new from Saudi Arabia as well as the nation of Qatar and United Arab Emirates. But having said all of that, that attack was the culmination, was a direct result, not of any obscure internet film, but of course it was a response by Russia against the United States and against Western intelligence and against Israel and against the UK and France to expose this weapons running operation for the world. Except this had a lot of play in the foreign media, but not the United States media. I know, did that make sense with that? I'm not sure.
No, that makes perfect sense. In fact, let me throw a Hillary bombshell back in. Aaron Klein, and I think he was probably thinking this is what Andrew Breitbart should have done. He sent out emails he got from Clinton's server under FOIA, and this is before they shut all that down, and you can't get anything now. And Aaron Klein's a highly respected broadcaster and journalist, and I won't go through all his accolades, but he's very well respected. Included in the email that he sent to me were emails where Hillary Clinton was broadcasting the location and travel plans of Chris Stevens.
Wow.
How do you like them apples?
Wow.
There were six of them, if I recall.
Okay.
I wrote about this March, maybe, February. I'd have to go back and look, but Doug, there's no question these were authentic. And when you look at the source, Aaron Klein's not going to put out garbage.
No, Aaron Klein is a very well-known and trusted source and has known and trusted sources feeding him information.
And so, when you look at that, now, the first one was in 2011, which was significantly before the attack. But what I think happened, now this is the Hodges corollary hypothesis here. If we put together a string of, hey, Chris Stevens is going down here to Circle K tomorrow, and he's going to travel over and watch the opera on Fifth Street on Wednesday, and you start broadcasting these movements a year before he's assassinated, then when you're really sending out the real deal for the right people to locate him, then you can hide that within the noise that you've already created with the previous emails. And Aaron had the previous emails, but I guarantee you, and I'll bet my bottom dollar, not in the bank, of course, but I'll bet you that there are emails that up until the time he was killed that were talking about his location.
Oh, sure.
Why would she stop? Yeah. If she's doing this in 2011, it doesn't make sense that you stop in 2012. Why do you think he was killed? Why do you think Chris Stevens had to be eliminated by this administration?
Well, okay. Boy, if I was on the witness stand right now, I'm not sure I could answer that question the way it was phrased. But I think the purpose of the attack was to expose the weapons running operation, was to secure the paperwork, let me just go back here and say this. There were two areas of concern separated by 2 kilometers of roadways, but you could actually probably they would actually probably fit in the confines of a football stadium, but the roadways were you know, like city roads. But there was the U.S. mission compound, and then there was the CIA annex, which was again the road distance, travel distance from mission to the annex, two kilometers. Now, back to your question, why was Stevens taken out? I think he was collateral damage. I think number one, the Russians knew that there was a meeting with the Turkish ambassador taking place that evening. In that evening, and people will notice that Turkish ambassador was able to leave the U.S. mission compound, and that's where the attack took place, without being molested, stopped, or otherwise interfered with. Then, moments later, you had various well-armed, well-trained paramilitary groups, terrorist groups, attack the U.S. mission compound. All right, there, Sean Smith was there along with Chris Stevens. Inside that compound were documents and was evidence that would expose what was taking place with respect to the attempted toppling of Bashar al-Assad, and also other necessary bits of information that would serve as evidence in a world court situation. Well, when the compound was attacked, they got Stevens. And by the way, Stevens was not killed immediately. Stevens was tortured for hours before, I mean 4 hours before he ended up at the hospital. He was raped. He was brutally sexually molested, eviscerated, and well, I'll just stop there. You get the idea. But for reasons which one may only speculate. But Stevens was eliminated, was killed, and I just happen to think that was kind of a collateral effect. I don't think Stevens was necessarily the target. I think the target was the information at the end, at the mission compound. And you'll notice too, Dave, what's not talked about in the 800 pages, or what's glossed over merely as a footnote, is what were the people in the CIA annex just 2 kilometers away from the mission compound doing while the compound was under attack, because it was staffed by CIA operatives, by global response staff operatives. When the CIA gets in trouble, for example, GRS responds. GRS was staffing the CIA annex. And so you'll notice that the annex wasn't touched, but the mission compound was. And if I can say one more thing, because this does play into it, there was a spy versus spy stuff going on long before September 11th, 2012. If you go back to the end of July of 2012, there was active surveillance being conducted of the U.S. mission compound. Among those people who were surveilling the mission compound were 7 Red Crescent, members of the Iranian Red Crescent. They were kidnapped off the streets near the compound in Benghazi around the end of July, beginning of August. Suddenly, they were let go a week or two, I believe it was, I'd have to check my notes on this, within a number of days after the attack took place in September of 2012. Now, why is that? Because there was complicity between Iran, Russia, and the spy apparatus attempting to get information about the weapons transfer and the personnel transfer from Benghazi and Derna, the Ho Chi Minh Trail of weapons, as Michael Reagan had called it in one of the articles contemporaneous to the attack, to get evidence about this, you know, going up to Syria to topple Assad, which would be against the economic and military interests of Russia. So now we have to advance, fast forward to today. As a result of all this, now we are fighting in Syria, and pretty soon, Dave, we're going to see our soldiers toe-to-toe against Russian soldiers. And as I've said many times before, World War III is not going to start in Iran. Iran will play a part in it, but it's going to start in Syria, and it's going to be between the United States and Russia, or U.S., NATO, and Russia. I could not agree with you more.
I've been writing for how long this has been going on, 3-4 years, that's exactly what's going to happen. It's biblical, too.
Yes, yes.
And Damascus, according to the Bible, will be destroyed.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, people look at Damascus now, and if you do a Google Earth analysis between, 5-6 years ago and today, you would say, well, boy, it's pretty much destroyed now. But no, we're talking about destroyed and the inability to rehabitate Damascus for a long time. So that does suggest either some sort of biological or chemical or nuclear event taking place in Damascus.
Yeah, a CBN attack, right. I agree. Yeah. I want to go back to one thing about Stevens. Let me tell you what I know with near 100% certainty. That Admiral Guyette, who was the commander of Carrier Task Force 3, and I want to mention his position so sensitive, it takes congressional approval to have him appointed. General Hamm was working with Guyette to try to rescue Stevens. He was the head of AFRICOM at the time, who's now since converted to being a Muslim, from what I'm told privately. Admiral Guyette's not been heard of. Now, what he did was he launched a drone, and he had everything on aerial surveillance, and they were basically disobeying Panetta's orders to stand down. And Hamm said, "I've seen enough. We're going to get him." And they knew what was going on. This is what I've been told by insider military sources. They wanted to rescue Stevens not because they had fond appreciation for him. They thought he was a thug. But they thought he would sing like a canary if he was rescued, because he would know, "I've been sold out by the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton," and he could have toppled the whole regime with these revelations. And they wanted to basically do a coup of opportunity. And unknown to both of them at the time, and this has been stressed to me, I have the name of one of the operatives from the CIA that was embedded into Hamm's command. His name was Colonel Rodriguez. He immediately arrested Hamm when he said, "We're a go for the rescue mission." I do not have the name of the operative who was embedded as the executive commander on his ship, you know, the XO. But what's interesting about that is that that Guyette was arrested, sent to Bremerton, Washington, and basically ABC said he was removed from command because he couldn't relate to different kinds of people, meaning he was a bigot. You don't get to be that level in the Navy, and you can't work with all kinds of people from different backgrounds. And that's the information I have, Doug, that we came within an eyelash of having a successful military coup. Now, why would they want a coup? Because Obama's been destroying the military since he took over, and especially with the firing of 300 senior command officers. So, I mean, what's your reaction to this?
Well, all of it plausible, if not, yeah, I mean, total agreement based on a very complex and a very lengthy investigative analysis that would far surpass anything the House Select Committee on Benghazi has done. Yes, you know, there are so many unanswered questions about the lack of response. And I wrestled with this, and I attempted to, and I used a lot of your material, a lot of your source material with this. You had this major excuse. Well, it wouldn't have mattered. For example, according to the House Select Committee on Benghazi, it wouldn't have mattered if an order would have been issued to send military assets, naval assets, or Air Force assets from Ramstein or from Avion or Sigonella. The timing, you know, it just wouldn't have mattered because of the timing. There wasn't enough time. Well, here's my question. Given the fact that Libya was such a volatile, was in such a volatile state, and earlier in the day you had situations taking place in Cairo, in Egypt, to the east of Libya, ostensibly over this video, where they breached the embassy walls and such. Why wouldn't military, naval, and Air Force assets be moved closer to northern Africa? That, to me, is kind of the larger question. And my sources told me that, for example, the training that was taking place with respect to the training that was taking place on 9/11, they were not doing internal training of our own personnel. They were training fighters for dispatch to Syria. So they were already involved in a detached operation from Libya. So, but getting back to your original question, there were assets, contrary to the military reports. I think you'll find, I think people will find, credible reports of assets, including drones. Because don't forget, there was southern Libya. There was a drone flying over there, an armed predator drone, to protect a cache of weapons collected by U.S. and NATO troops in southern Libya. So they could have dispatched help, but didn't. And your account with Ham and Guyette and such, yeah, I mean, but I've never seen it explained. And it's not addressed in the 800-plus pages from the House Select Committee.
Well, it never will be. You know, you're right in that AFRICOM would not have been able to respond under Ham's leadership in time to save Stevens, but Guyette using drones could have held them at bay. That's the thinking of the sources I have. In fact, Doug, I'm going to go back just for a minute to September, late September of 2012, when, you know, 2 weeks after this event happened. I had all this information from two different sources. These two gentlemen were collaborating together, and for some unknown reason, they chose me to bring it out in the open. And I sat on it because I couldn't get collaborating information. I sat on this until the first week in October. And then they both got me on the phone and they said, publish the damn article or we're not going to give you anything again. And after a lot of soul searching, I said, well, you know, circumstantially, this makes sense. And I came out with an, oh, did the wolves howl? If you remember, Glenn Beck was vilifying me, or his people were. And 4 months later, they were repeating the story as if they had discovered it.
Yeah.
And this whole thing with Clinton's complicity, and this is where I think she's complicit, where I got on this from my side, and this has been in the media in a marginal way, but I know this directly in ways I can't reveal. But I'll just say it this. Stevens was adamant about increasing the size of his bodyguard because he knew he was a marked man. He knew it. He knew they were leaving him exposed. And Clinton told him, we can't give you any more because of budget. Yeah, here we got a president whose administration's more than doubled the national debt since he took over, and we're worried about a platoon of Marines.
Well, you know, yes, you are correct. And I would urge people to understand the difference between a personal security detail and security at the U.S. mission compound. Separate that from what they're really talking about, at least in the halls of Congress, to shore up the embassy, the official embassy at Tripoli. Now you've got two separate security issues here. You've got Stevens, who's traveling to Benghazi, wants to create an outpost, a diplomatic outpost in Benghazi, for example, but only after the black ops are done. And he's got a special relationship with the Libyan people. Not that that helped him any. But the cries for security, as known by the general public, were not for Stevens, were not for the U.S. mission compound, were not for the CIA annex. No one wanted security there or to call for security there simply because they did not want the people to know the CIA annex, annex existed because of the nature of its operation.
Right.
They were talking about security for the embassy, not the CIA aspect. So there are two separate things here. Now Stevens knew that when he was in Benghazi, he was in Benghazi for 10 days, left for a week, and came back the day before. I think he came back on September 10th of 2012. And at that point, he said, wait a minute, man. I mean, before he left the first time, he said, things are bad. I need a security detail, a military security detail. When he came back, he said, man, things have really deteriorated in the past week. I really need some military assets around me. Okay, but again, this was under the radar of any congressional oversight. So you're talking about concurrent overlapping operations, one that is visible, and then you got the CIA criminal cabal.
That accounts for a little bit of our variation in the story, Doug, because we're drawing from parallel sources.
Right.
Anyway, we got to take a break. We're going to our top of the hour break, and boy, this is great stuff. Let's get a little more into the direct role that Clinton's played in so many of these scandals. As if we haven't done enough, we want to do more. We'll be back with Doug Hagman in hour number two for this most riveting information. Stay tuned.